but we never did an introduction. So this is going to be the introduction after the fact. But then I have to ask you my regular normal questions that I ask everybody, my fun questions. But first off, welcome to Talking Comics, even though we've been on here for an hour and a half. I appreciate you joining. I'll cut this and put it in the beginning. But tell everybody who you are, how you got started real quick, too.
No problem. I am Lauren Hazel, but most people know me as Knights of G here on TikTok, where I have turned my channel that used to be my gaming clip channel into pretty much a comic book industry education, book publishing, entertainment industry education channel, where I talk about my experience and the do's and don'ts of kind of creating a profitable, sustainable business in the world of comics and publishing. Whether you are trying to make something of your own comics or your own manga, or you are an author with your own book that maybe you want to do comics or vice versa, or those who are even looking to turn theirs into a show of animation, I give you the behind the scenes. I have worked in the entertainment industry since I was a child of about 11, 12 years old. So I am I am not a child star, but I am a child who has worked in the industry for quite some time. So I've seen the good, bad, and everything in between. I primarily do consulting, marketing, and sales for a lot of different companies. I've done companies you probably know of, all around from big publishers like Random House, Random Penguin before they did the merger. So I've worked over there. I've done a lot of gigs for authors who have been on the New York Times bestsellers. Actually, one of the authors I worked with for quite a few years apparently is one of the top sellers of her books of all time in the YA genre. Wow. So I've been around. I've worked in TV and film. I often go and speak at film conventions. The biggest one I spoke to is the one at Cannes, the big one in the industry. So I am consulting across the board. I try to give some of that advice to those who are seeking those different pathways with the goal of just helping people, saying that if you want to be an artist or you want to be a writer, you know, that you can make it work if you do the proper work and not just fall into the traditional tropes of being the broke artist. I believe in artists making money from their work and creating businesses that, you know, help allow them to buy chicken sandwiches.
That's the theme. That's got to be the title of the episode. Buy a chicken sandwich, or be able to buy a chicken sandwich.
With your comics.
With your comic or whatever your business model is, you got to be able to afford that chicken. I got to buy two, though, because I got three, four. I eat a lot, too. But
yeah, see, you're like,
I kids
need two,
and family.
My daughter
got
to have one. Right. Everybody else in the house got to have one. So I'm like 5-6 chicken sandwiches on
I got to buy 5 chicken sandwiches, not just one. So we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Like, the bigger the company, the more approvals that tend to happen. That's what anything, like, even with TV and films, a whole lot of approvals. That's why I, like, laugh when certain people on TikTok is like, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm like, hell
no, you're not.
No, you're not. Like, this movie's going to come out. I was like, at one point, I was like, I won't believe it until it hits a trailer, because I've been through that process multiple times and I know what happens.
Right.
And at this point, even when you have a completed project, there's no guarantee that it will be released. Even if it has distribution, we've seen that, like, Batwoman, that movie been, been sitting in the can. And even when you look at different shows, like, let's say that I'm a Star Wars fan, so the Acolyte, so that got a lot of flack, even though that was one of the highest performing shows, right? Because you didn't need, it was designed for you not to need to know anything about Star Wars, and you could just kind of jump in.
Yep.
And, like, get through it, be like, okay, and be curious, and then get into the other stuff, right? That was what the show was asked to be designed as. So some people, like, I don't see all this other stuff. I said they kind of put it in there, but they were told not to make it too much, and, like, anybody should be able to drop in. That was the mandate with that show. So of course it's going to be constructed differently. And then on top of that, people forget about this thing called COVID, and that how all of TV and film shut down. And when they did start up again, they had to change how everyone acted. Like, so when you see people standing and they're not reacting, moving, that person was on set that day. The other person came in the next day. The other person came in the next day. And then they just glued everybody together as if they're standing together, but there's no one next to them because of some of the COVID procedures. Or there was glass there. And that's why you don't see people do things like, hey, why are they not moving? And I was like, that's why. That was early, early in when they had to film that scene. So it's like, I remember it when I remember the stuff that went down. I remember that it took them, even them, they were talking about that show like 2-3 years before they actually started filming it.
Right.
And people forget that, but people forget the Star Wars Celebration. They wanted the Kenobi show. I was like, yeah, I don't want a movie. I don't want a show. Just leave Kenobi alone. You're not going to like what happens, which is kind of what happened. So, but I understood that process because I've been in internet working TV and film. And when other people don't understand, well, this is why that happened, because you couldn't stand next to each other. You couldn't film on the same day, the same time. Or you're filming here. You're talking to a baseball, right? And then next to you is a big plane of glass. And then there's the next person over there. And they're talking to another baseball. Or we're supposed to be talking face to face. And we are like 10 feet apart with glass in the middle of us. So I remember the times.
I just recently, in the last 2 months, watched The Acolyte for the first time. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like, it got so much hate when it first came out. I just stayed away from it. And then finally, I just watched it. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, but I run a Star Wars group on a different platform, and like we watched it as it was coming out, and it's like when you because I originally come from music, right? So there's a reason why certain artists, they don't want to get what we call the producer's ear. So when they record their piece, they leave, because once you start learning how to pick up certain things, it never really leaves you. You always kind of hear when you screw up. And so it kind of hinders people. So you got like artists like Eminem or Dre that takes forever to put out something a lot of times, because if it doesn't sound exactly right, because they know all the mistakes, because they've been in the producer seat so long, they've learned it, like, you know, as if they were soundstage musicians. So you just notice all the things. So like I have people who work on the ground on TV and film stuff, and when they point out crap, you just never unhear it or never unsee it, you know. So you got to have to turn your brain off just to, let me sit and just watch this and, you know, just for the enjoyment. Just enjoy it for the story that it is. And then we have to discuss it. So sometimes I have to watch things again and discuss those points and then bring in the other side of the technical things that kind of went on. But, you know, it's not a bad story for what they were, for what it was supposed to be, which was a entryway into Star Wars for a different demographic that they need in order for there to still be Star Wars 10, 20 years down the line. And that's what people kind of forget. Like, Star Wars was not made for girls to watch. Star Wars was made for young teenage boys to watch. So it's always been very more centered towards that. But you do have all these, you know, women characters or girl characters in it, you know, that do different things. And you needed a live action that kind of, you know, Rey was for the little girl.
Right.
But it's still a very boy focused story, but it's for the little girl. This one is for the, like, this is the teenager watching this.
Teenage girl, yeah.
And then you can see that from all the things that are mentioned and everything else. It's like, oh, okay, this is for, and those that's the demographic that actually did extremely well, which, so they hit their mark.
Right.
But the show called Andor cost almost $1 billion to make. So one of them had to go. One of them had to go, because I think Acolyte cost $167 million. And people are like, oh, it costs so much. And then but no, Andor costs us almost $800 million. And they're like, oh,
wow.
Yeah. Andor is almost a $1 billion show.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. Probably.
Especially for it just to be a streaming service show. That's amazes me in this world today. Like Netflix and these streaming services that are paying so much money for these.
Oh, that's when
but they're making like, I guess.
Yeah, it wasn't recovering the money. And that's been like part of the problem. Like that was during, I'm gonna term it the golden age of, if you have a show and it works, especially if it's from, like, you have an idea for an IP they currently hold, they will just throw in money. They needed content. And The Acolyte was a show they weren't even going to release at all. But if it wasn't for the shut, like it was supposed to be released like 2-3 years later, it wasn't finished. So they were making the show and then the shutdowns happened and then they could film again. So they had to finish the rest of The Acolyte. And then it was like, oh shit, we're not going to release this. And so you have a whole lot of not just Star Wars, but Marvel shows and everything else. And when people couldn't go anywhere and the movies were still shut down, or people were, and then after that, afraid to go to the movies, well, we got to do something. So they started just releasing stuff that at one point they had decided that we didn't want to release, because every time they release it, they have to pay the actors and any writer on them the royalty money and all the extra money, because the way the contracts are traditionally built. So it's like, if we don't release certain shows, that extra money that we have to pay out, we don't have to contractually pay out. And so now, right. Oh, we need content and keep people entertained because we can't get them to go to movies to watch a movie. All right, let's just release it at this point. And then we had the strikes, which also, didn't help certain, unfortunately, like certain shows and stuff got caught up in that didn't do as well as they would have been, but there could be no real promotion.
Right.
So they suffered from that. But, you know, it's like people don't understand like the complexity of the industries, and like comics is a, I think I've said in my video multiple times, comics, I was told when I was getting into it that it was the ghetto of publishing.
I've heard you say that. I've heard other people say that too. It's like, okay, that's crazy.
Yeah. Because music to publishing, and then I would say, oh yeah, I'm working on a subscription box and da 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 da. And I'll never forget a woman telling me, and she was like an executive in one of the big publishing houses. I won't say her name because she's still working. I want
right.
That kind of thing. But she's like, why would you want to go over there? That is the ghetto of publishing. She was like,
is it
crazy?
Is it worse than music?
Okay. Music is over here, right? Music in terms of up to date and stuff, understanding kind of streaming and everything else is over here because it's been through it already. TV and film is starting to hit that in a major way. But music got hit first. Regular publishing got hit after that.
Okay. Yep.
And now you're seeing with the strikes and everything that happened with TV and film and the Hollywood side and like globally too. You're just starting to see that where you see like Hollywood unemployment is over 80%, like close, it's like 90-something% through the unions, to the point where the unions, the different unions, because more than just the actors union, everybody else, you know, they have the sound crew, they have their own union. They literally are giving webinars on other career choices for people right now because there's no work.
Wow.
For a lot of people. So that's a hell of a thing for them to be doing, right? A lot of those people who can worked on some big shows that we grew up with or we knew are trying to make comic books, hoping that in 3 or 4 years things would kind of work itself out and it can come back with something that they can turn into some type of production, because everything, like the money for stuff, is just not there, right? So now you have comic books or the comic book industry. And I'll be very specific. I am talking about the American comic book industry. There's larger industry out in the world. People forget Europe, France. Comic books are really well, more respected in France. You have comics in the Asian markets, Korea, China, and Japan. Everyone know, a lot of people are more familiar with manga. Manga means comic, by the way. That annoys the hell out of me. I'm like, I'm talking about the same thing. It's an interchangeable word. Like people,
I laughed when you put that video out the other day of talking about that.
It's because it's like, dude, the difference is the art style and how you read things, because you read things to stay and all the art style. I said, yeah, but when you like some, there was a, I don't know that girl's name because it's the first time I've ever seen this video. And she was like, I'm making this type of manga versus an American comic. And this is the difference. And she's pointing out something that for a lot of American comics is really no longer true in terms of like what you emphasize in the comic. A lot of that's not as true anymore, especially with the younger or younger writers in comics and outside of DC and Marvel. We're looking at different industry as a whole, because a lot of them grew up with anime, and a lot of them grew up reading the pirated sites like I did, reading different manga. So that influence of how you do things and how you storytell is also seen in the comic books that are American style comic books now. So the difference is mostly how stuff is read, left to right or right to left, and just specific art style choices on how the art itself looks, you know, because the influence is there because they grew up reading that too. Only they said, hey, I'm not going to do manga. I'm just going to do, you know, I want to do a horror comic. I want to do a romance. I get to write for, you know, Wonder Woman or Superman this time. So it's changed versus some of the older writers that have been around for a while, the choices that they make. But if you look at comic books in general from Golden Age all the way to, you know, current, I guess, modern right now, a lot of the wordy comics and stuff, he's like, I don't like wordy comics. Well, if you're looking at a comic from freaking 1950, 1970, yeah, you're going to see blocks of text like this and the pictures right here. You're going to see that, right? Because that's just how everyone did their damn comics, right? But if you compare that comic to something that's in 2000, you're not going to see as much blocks of text. You're going to see more expressiveness in the art. The art quality went up 1,000% when you compare it to that. But, you know, there's reasons for that. Like, you know, the paper things are printing on and the colors and what you could and could not do with the machines. Like, anyone knows that little technical stuff that's part of the history of comics and even manga. Manga traditionally is printed on the worst paper possible. It's like,
ooh, true.
Yeah, so, you know, little things like that. Like, I believe when you go into an industry and this is the thing you really want to do, you should really learn the history of your industry so you don't make videos like that and kind of sound kind of dumb to me, right? But, you know, if you're going to be this as a professional, it's like you're either a hobby. If you're a hobbyist, doesn't matter. Make to your heart's desire. Doesn't matter if you make money. This is your hobby, whatever. Be in love. If you are going to do this semi-professionally or part-time, so this thing is going to be a business, and you would like it to generate revenue and have a profit, then you have to think about it differently. If this is going to be the thing you transition to full time, you have to have a different plan for that, because at one point you're going to stop doing whatever you're doing full time to merge into this full time. So you got to be able to take care of things like healthcare and your rent or your mortgage. And if you have children, you know, and retirement, you know, those little bits and pieces. I make the joke about, can you afford a chicken sandwich? You know, I make the chicken sandwich joke. Just to explain a little context in my head, that comes from a Cat Williams interview in which he talked about most comedians don't even make enough money after a set to go buy a chicken sandwich. That's how broke comedians are. So I make that reference to, if you're so broke that you can't afford a chicken sandwich, and this is the only income or, you know, you're trying to bring out, you know, you might want to rethink some lives. And, you know, being in this industry for as long as I have, I've lost a lot of people personally that I've known who passed, couldn't afford their treatments for diseases they might have still been alive for, has serious mental health issues, couldn't get treatment for that, and, you know, wind up, you know, deciding to, you know, meet the angels a little earlier, and just terrible things happen and not, you know, having to do GoFundMes. I mean, we have writers at Marvel that consistently have to do GoFundMes like every 2 months in order to afford rent, and they currently still write for Marvel. So it's, to me, it's very interesting to watch certain people who write for Marvel, DC, or have done art for Marvel and DC, their videos, doing videos on TikTok, listening to what they have to say, and then on Instagram, listening to what they have to say and kind of like, oh, I can call bullshit on this because I kind of know a little bit more about your situation. And then, but you've
right.
told
All
us.
All because
though.
They chose that. Right.
They chose that. But my thing is, they tell us, like, you told us you got X amount of dollars. Like, I will not, when I comment on it, I'm not guessing it. This is right. something you revealed in 3 videos. So my point is, well, if you want to do this, you want to be a creator, go ahead. I was a musician for you. I was a professional musician. I toured. You tell me about, you know, broke and trying to make sure you have enough money for even to go get lunch and being on the road. I can have that conversation. But my thing with other people is, particularly when you're at comics, which is not well respected, comparatively to other things, the arts in general in the United States are not as respected. You're going to have a tough go at it. So if you want to do it, just, can we be a little bit smarter? Can we be a creator who doesn't believe that you need to be broke, that you need to be in a situation where you constantly need people to save you and not go through different, you know, situations where you can't get help because you can't afford the help? Because after a while, it does kind of get old, because it's like, if every month we see you and it's the same story and I love you to death, but some of us might be struggling this month with something because a tragedy happened, like our car got totaled. So now I got to deal with insurance who wants to argue with me about an accident I didn't cause. Like, people have those types of situations. So, you know, my thing is like, yes, you can be a creator and whatever it is that you're doing, art as a writer, but let's be smart about it. Like, we know everybody, we know the stories, we know the tragedies, we know, we see some of the successes, but we don't necessarily know the background of how that person got to that point. And most of the time, for most people, it's more common that it took at least 20 years to actually get there than it's not common that it took 2 or 3 years. Like, even our book folks, Stephen King took almost 20 years. George R. R. Martin, you know, wrote for TV and film, you know, and I was like, dude, it took 30 years from that, like, you know, and he was on, he wrote Beauty and Beast and all that other stuff. And like, it took like 15, 20 years for the book to pick up versus when they're working. You got a lot of comic book writers that that they were lucky early on they got to write for Marvel and DC, and it was more of like an apprenticeship situation with some of them. That's harder to do now based on how things are kind of, the industry is and structured. But like for a lot of people, if they're lucky, if within 5-6 years they see success, and I say, okay, is success the financial success, meaning can you afford all your bills? Can you have your savings so that you have something to do when you're, when nobody wants you to write for their book anymore? Because ageism is a thing in this industry. I mean, we have great writers that they don't get to be on the new books. You know, they pick the younger writer who gets to be on the books. You could talk about some gender dynamics. There are people on books that, you know, you got racial that who, like, people want to argue whether or not they should be on those books at all, whether or not they do a good job on those stories at all. But is the same criticism felt for somebody else? Like, we could have those different types of conversations. So if you as a creator want to have a career as a writer or as an artist, beautiful. So let's figure out, let's plan out how we're going to do this in a way that, you know, you're not hurting yourself on making decisions that, you know, cause you to be in duress, like so many of the creators who we see on TikTok and other places in not so great situations.
Very true. That's something that's been something I've had to wrap my head around, is when I start doing conventions next year, it's, I have a comic book that I'm writing, you know, it's almost done, but I have to switch my mindset of, I got to go for these conventions for marketing, right? It's to advertise the podcast, the, you know, the book, a little bit the book, you know, but the podcast, the book's going to help pay for my lunch. The rest of it's just marketing expense, you know, and it's hard to wrap your head around that, because I come from the gaming side. Like, I know you've talked videos about, you've helped with tabletop people as well, like gamers,
yeah, you know, gaming,
and Kickstarters.
Yeah. Right.
And I used to own a hobby shop and sold, you know, board games, card games, all that stuff. And then when I sold that, I transitioned into miniature game accessories, and I started a little company, and I made a bunch of accessories, and I would travel around and sell those. But you could pay, you know, you could pay for your booth, your hotel, your food, you know, you could make a, you know, a little bit of money. Like I said, I could buy a chicken sandwich at the end of the weekend, usually, you know, 90% of the time. But then now it's like, I'm going to go to these conventions and I'm not going to have anything to sell. And I'm like, it's been hard to wrap my head around that.
Yeah, the convention. I know sometimes I get heat about the convention stuff that I talk about, but it's like, dude, I've worked conventions. I've sold to, I've consulted for the convention, like the biggest convention organizers, Repop and such. I've been in it. If any, there's some convention buildings I know like the back of my hand, because I'm always, was always in there and stuff like that. Like internet, I know how all that stuff works in there. So when I tell people, I was like, dude, if you're going to go to a convention and you got your one book and no one knows who you are, you know, let's really think about this, you know, financially well, because the people who do conventions damn near full time, like convention season will start for most people in another couple of months. Tables and Artist Alley, $500-$800. If you go into the larger conventions, you're looking at $2,000 for some of the larger ones in there. And it's like, well, I don't have to get into those. I say, yeah, but they're the ones who get like 80,000 people coming through in a day. Right? So it's like, if you're at a smaller convention and a total convention only gets 10,000 people, and you're paying like $500-$800 just for the table. Some places will charge you for the electricity access. That's a whole other thing, right?
I just paid that bill.
Yeah, just like, you know, the electricity access, like, and people like, I said, look, because the convention space, the building, convention space, if it's anybody else's conference, they do charge you for all of those things, right? And you have to negotiate and do your thing. So when you talk about that same convention, that building that had the Comic-Con this weekend, the following, the middle of the week, they're going to have the tractor convention. And everybody at the tractor convention has to pay for electricity and internet out of pocket. And it's, you know, $10,000 for what would be Artist Alley for you guys. So trust me, you know, it's a, you know, this is a business. So if you're going to be doing conventions, and a lot of my full, like the ones I mentor, my full-time or even have some, I have my part-time folks. One of them, he did 18 conventions last year, conventions alone. And then like four pop-up, you know, holiday kind of.
Right.
You know, shows. Shops too.
One day shows.
You know, yeah, well, you know, well, one day shows, they're cute, they're really nice. But then my full-time folks, they do at least 40 a year.
Wow.
And sometimes they're at two conventions at the same time because they have a whole nother crew at another convention. And this is how they make all of their money. So right. I have one. He takes out bank loans every year. He takes out a bank loan for like almost $500,000 because he has to buy, he has to restock on all his material, all the stuff, because he knows by the middle of the year, he's made profit. He would have made $700,000-$800,000. He would have paid the bank loan off, you know, and that he's good for the rest of the year. Everything else be financed, right?
Right.
But he knows his numbers like back to back, like this is what's going to happen. But if he has a year, a bad year, where he's more than halfway through his conventions and he hasn't made that $500,000 back that he's paying to that bank, he going to be financially ruined if he don't, you know, make that up, because his salary doesn't really come out to after everything is paid off in a profit. And if he has other people, so, you know,
right.
That's the life of a lot of vendors. And I'm not talking about a vendor that's attached to like a, you know, a Sony or a Disney or whoever. I'm talking about a regular right. a dude who may have owns a store, right? You know, who or sells lightsabers, my lightsaber folks, there's a whole thing about that. And that's the way they live their life. So that's the way they're doing it. And you're an artist, Alan, you told me you want to do 20 conventions. I said, you have to like, oh, I did good this convention. I'm like, well, what does that mean? Say that in my comments. What, let's get the numbers out, because let other people know. It's people on my channel who've never done a convention. So you guys don't talk to each other. So I'm going to make you talk to each other in my comments by revealing the numbers of the information, so that someone who don't know no better go in there and wind up, you know, losing $6,000, or when convention organizers are screwing people over, let you guys have that conversation in my comments, because people read my comments, and it's better it comes from you because you don't want to believe what I say. Let people tell you, oh, right. Yeah, I had to pay $300 for internet. Oh, shit, I had to pay $500 for internet extra, and they only charged me. Like the first day, they didn't help me have a free day internet, didn't tell me it was going to be that. And then they turned the internet off and I couldn't get a signal. Therefore, I couldn't make any transactions. So I had to fork over $100, $150. That is true stories, right? So I make them say that in the comments. Or, oh, yeah, I sold, there was one. I did well. I said, okay, well, no, I said, we do numbers here. Tell me what you actually sold. And it's like, oh, I sold this. I was able to pay for my table. Okay, so you made table, not profit. Profit, because you had to drive there, you had to have a hotel, you had to pay your help. Like, remember that you have help. They probably wanted to get paid or something. So you the table was $500. You covered that, but nothing else got covered. And the comics you sold, you have to replace, you know, or the merch you sold, you're going to have to replace because you have another convention. So you're happy to make table. Be clear that you're happy to make table. I have no judgment against that. If you're happy to make table, great, because right. You plan to lose for this year, because you're just learning, which is fine. You're just learning. But there's other people in here who thinking you walking away with $10,000 out of convention in profit. That's not what's happening. So let's, you know, just share some information so other people can learn, or you can learn that, hey, you don't have to work it like this. You know, I even gave a calculator away. It's like, hey, do this calculator. It'll help you out. It's not perfect, but it will help you kind of figure out, like, if you're going to lose, it's okay to lose if you really want to be there for whatever the reason might be. I'm not against that. Just make sure you understand that's what's happening. Because, like, people don't go over to the book talk much and pay attention to the authors, or they don't really go to the artist talk, because a lot of those artists are very open with how much they make, how much they sold, how their setups are going. And they tell you, hey, I lost bad this weekend, or this happened. Like, a bunch of book authors last year lost a lot of money at conventions, you know, someone lost their books, or the convention organizer wanted to do something funky. Like, hey, donate 20 of your books and we're going to send people with a scavenger hunt around the convention and then we'll comp you for the books. And it didn't, the comp didn't happen. Like, you know, I think if you're a comic book creator, you would want to know that in case a convention come around, or you're at that same convention, they come around to you and do the same thing. You know, then maybe I shouldn't do that, because I remember what they did last year to like 12 other people. You know, those folks lost money in inventory. So I like my channel to be very much that education channel where people can communicate by me forcing them to actually give the real information of what happened to you, what was the numbers. Was it just table? You know, how much did you sell? You know, at some conventions, they're really bad about organizing tables. Like, I want that information to be there in those comments so that from me just saying in a video, you read other artists coming in from that side. You read the booktop authors coming through and commenting on their experience at different conventions, other comic publishers who are small, giving you their view of what's happening at some of the conventions that they went to. You know, I think that's, I'm trying to create a place where there's some good information out there that people can kind of get and where, you know, what they decide to do or how to handle themselves.
And they can make better decisions by doing so. They don't have to hold that, you know, close to their chest.
That's really smart. Yeah, there's a lot of like, and I've heard it before, it's like, oh, no one talks about the stuff you talk about. You know, they just don't. Like, I go around, I talk to everybody. I'm very much introvert, but I go and talk to everybody, right? I want to find out what the information is. I want to know, right? I'm going to go research. Most people don't do that. So I can talk to someone who writes comics at Marvel. They have no idea how the marketing department at Marvel works.
Not at all.
Can't tell you nothing. I've had very prominent comic book writers who I've known for years tell, when we had the subscription box, it's like, oh yeah, I need to talk to someone over at Marvel, in DC, because I need X amount of a specific type of comics from them. And they're like, oh, no one over there will ever talk to you. I was like, oh, okay. And I picked up the phone and called them at their office and they gave me whatever I wanted. Because they don't understand how the other side of Marvel or the other side of DC work, because at the end of the day, they're a business. I'm not trying to pitch them a comic, my dude. I'm trying to take some of the inventory they already have, make sure I can use their logo legally without having to deal with stuff, helping them sell and promote their books. So it's a different conversation. You have that conversation because oftentimes you're going to pitch a story. I'm not trying to write for them. I am trying to get access to help them move inventory. So for me, you know, I've noticed that people can work in the same companies. They can both be artists, both be writers, and neither one really knows what the other person next to them does or the extent of what was actually done on a project or how their books are marketed or not marketed, right? Because Marvel and DC, as companies and entities, they don't need to make a profit. So how they do things is very different because that's not their purpose in existing. When you are a new comic book publisher, at worst, for most of you, you need to try to break even at some point, you know, and then, okay, at least we broke even. Good. That's like, that could be a beautiful thing. And then move to, let's see what profit can actually look like, because publishing in general is a long tail business, right? Because you're essentially selling a $20 thing, you know, or $30 thing or $8 thing. And you have to sell volume. If you're not selling hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands and thousands and thousands of copies, you're probably going to not make that much money to really cover a lot of the costs that it will take for you to do that. Even if you're writing Superman, like it's a very expensive business. So I know someone's like, oh, well, I don't think it was a Superman comic. One of the comics sold, like, it was from DC, I think sold a million, about 1.something million or something like that. I was like, great. So they still don't break even on that. It doesn't make up for none of the other projects. Like, they're still in a huge deficit, you know, because there are people at Marvel. I mean, you guys are work for hire. You know, you wrote, you colored, you lettered, beautiful. But there are people at those companies that are salary people who have benefits that have to be paid out and all these things. So there's a lot more, you know, expense and those companies. So like, people only think as far as they can see in front of them. And, you know, if you're going to be in the business of anything, you have to realize that, hey, I don't have a multi-billion dollar company backing me. I don't have a Disney backing me or Warner, Discovery, soon to be Netflix, whatever the hell's going on backing me, right?
Yeah, whatever's happening with that.
Yeah, at the time of this conversation, you know, because we don't see what's happening. But when you don't have that, you know, you got to work within what you are willing to sacrifice and what you can afford to do from a marketing perspective. I know, creators, you know, I hate marketing. I was like, yeah, that's why your marketing sucks. Because once you say you hate something, your mind has already turned off all the things that need to be done that can actually help you. So you need to change your mindset. Why do you hate marketing? If you hate marketing, you don't even mention sales. Marketing, sales, I'm trying to teach people, are two different functions. They are married functions, but they're two different functions. And marketing is a very wide function. part of marketing is research and development. It's figuring out what audience, what thing that audience will be interested in. Will this audience be willing to pay for that thing? How much are they willing to invest in that thing? How long will it take them to be interested in potentially parting with money so that you can get to the sales side of things, right? And so that's a very long process, but most people believe marketing is just, hey, I got my comic. Hey, it's the new Superman movie. Well, Superman has had decades of marketing and all kinds of things integrated with it. So all you have to do is say, hey, there's a new Superman movie coming out, and it's going to have, people are going to spend some money because it's freaking Superman, right?
They're going to flock to it.
Right. Like, but if it's a comic that no one's like, hey, this is ABC comic and we just released our new manga. I don't know who you are. I don't know what this is. And no, I'm not paying $20.
Right. That was the big decision I was trying to make, is figuring out how much to pay or charge, you know, for a comic. I'm still not settled, but I did not want to do a $10 or $15 comic book. Like, you know, it's a standard length comic book, you know, 22 pages or whatever. It's like, I want it to be, you know, $6-$7, you know. So I found a printer. You know, I have a friend that owns a print shop, luckily. So okay. He's giving me a killer deal. So I just got to go to Michigan to get it, which is fine. I'll be glad to go travel to Michigan and go pick it
up. Okay. Well, see, you do stuff like that. Like, it's nice that you mentioned that, because, like, I had a live, I was like 5 hours or so. And that's why sometimes
I watch most of it.
Yeah, you jumped on it. It's like, but people jump on it and then share their freaking resources. Like, oh, somebody was selling their confidence. I was like, what? And then they would tell me how much. I was like, $12 per issue. That's what the printer was charging them? What the hell? Like, I'm like, because I've been in that side. So I'm like, that's way too much. And I'm glad that they said something, because someone else who has never printed a comic before does not know who to go to as a printer. Those two people connected and shared the resource. So that person is now in conversations with that printer about how much and how to, you know, figure out their stuff. Because they've made the comics. They never had a print version of it, and they didn't know where to go and like what questions to ask. So now that connection was made. So like stuff like that, people don't know. But like, if you're listening to this, I don't want y'all spending $15 per issue on a comic unless it's a proof.
Right. A proof is one thing. $20 for a proof. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
But
fine.
You know, but not $15, $12. Man, I can't imagine paying $12 a book. That would be crazy.
$12 a book, and you ordered like 500 books, and so you have to charge $30 for a comic, which is like one of the things I mentioned in videos before. I was like, dude, y'all overcharging for comics, because like, if like you're already fighting the fact that there's a market of cheaper comics, that people are complaining about the price of those comics.
Okay? Going up, $5 for a
$5
book.
You know, and now you're a brand new writer, brand new artists. I was like, if you really want me to be nitpicky, that art don't look good.
Right.
You know, the coloring looks awful. You need to have a better letterer. The story structure, like, if you want me to be the editor, I can tell you I'm not paying $30 for that. I've paid $30-something for people's comments. I'm like, yeah, this is shitty. Like, you know, and that's not the reaction you want. Like, no. You don't want. I have people like trying to get me to read their comics now. You know, I'm like, dude, when I was over on the book side, them companies, what people in Book Talk do for free, they paid me for. I got paid to read them manuscripts.
Right.
I got paid to read them damn books. Y'all doing it for free. Bless you. But shout out to all my book talkers. When they see this, I'm sure. It's like, they get paid for that? I was like, yeah, they was paying me. They was paying some other people too. I don't know what y'all was.
I went through a book publishing. I did book publishing several years ago. And yeah, you paid people to read and edit. And, you know, what hurt us is the marketing, right? And you said it earlier. They think if you put something out, if I publish this book behind me, you know, if I put this book out, people are just going to buy it. They don't know that there's a whole marketing, which is more important than actually writing the book. The book's just the easy part compared to the marketing to get people to buy the book.
That's the most important part of what you're going to do. Like I said, marketing starts with research development. But here's the rub, and this is why I try to tell folks before they start signing their life away, aka their rights. And doesn't mean not every contract is everyone signing their life away, but there's a lot of people right. who wind up doing it, right? They should talk to their manga people who that, well, not the American manga folks, because they don't know shit. Respectfully, you don't know shit.
Right.
You need to talk to the Asian ones, the ones who work themselves to death, the ones who are in contracts so bad they call it slavery. Y'all need to talk to them because y'all think the grass is greener. But on to topic here. Marketing is the most important part of it. It's like research and development, right? So research right. and development, is there an audience, viable audience for the type of book that I want to create or the story? Because sometimes you're lucky and you get a lick and it's like this romantasy is doing really big right now in books. So, whoa, cool. I happen to write a romantasy book. Beautiful. There's an audience for that. Great. You just got to tap into it, right? You know, in general, right? But not everybody's that lucky. Most people are not. Like, you might want to, you know, write a Western. Like, to me, I like Western comics, particularly like fantasy or science fiction. I do love a good Western, right? So I'll be intrigued and interested. And I might give it a 3-issue chance, depending on how they create it. But a lot of people may not like Westerns as comic books. So
that's my favorite. Deadly Tales of a Gunslinger. My favorite book right now.
Right. So like if we like Westerns, like me and you like Westerns, so I'll give it a chance. Right. Like I'll give anything a chance. Right. But a lot of people may not. So you putting your comic in front of people who don't like Westerns is probably going to be a hell of a hard sell. You know, that's part of your marketing is understanding that, because you ideally want to attract the right people who like the thing anyway. So it's not convincing them to like the genre, but convincing them that this story you wrote would give them the high they want, whatever the experience they're looking for. They just want to, like, this just like trash fiction. It's not good writing, but it sells like hell. Why? Because it gives people the experience that they want, right? There's a lot of extra unclothed fiction that does very well on BookTok. And it's not the best writing for most of it, but it doesn't matter because it gives those readers what they want in that particular moment. There's comics and graphic novels like that that do very well on Kickstarter because when people get it, it gives them what they want in the moment that they want it for those things. You have to understand right. who your reader and your buyers are, and those are not necessarily the same person. And is the thing that I'm producing, is the story I'm going to tell, going to feed that need? Is it going to entertain them? Number one, it is, should always entertain them. Is it going to give them the feeling that they want? Happiness, sadness, joy. Take me away from my life. My life sucks. I had a craptastic week this week. And I just need to read about somebody else doing something stupid or having a beautiful, happy ending. And she got the man. Even though there's no man coming after me. Like, there's a whole bunch of women who, that's why a lot of women like romance. It's like, ooh, look, my, they married somebody. They're like, let me read this book. Oh, he's beautiful. And that's what they need to get in the particular place they need to do some other activities after this book. So, you know, you just got to know your audience. You have right. to have to fall in love. It's easier if you fall in love with your audience. There's people who hate this marketers. We hate certain audiences for some people, certain things, but they know everything about them, right? I say, right. as a creative, fall in love with your artists. You should be curious about them. You are obsessed with knowing, why do you do the things you do? Why do you think the things you think? Like, treat it as if it's a courtship where you want to learn all things about the other person because you want to kind of, you know, model yourself after it. Like, you know that they love that favorite bookstore, so you're over there and you start showing up with those types of books, so you're trying to attract that person to them. That's exactly how you have to treat your marketing as a courtship, because that turns around and leads to conversations, which leads to sales, because sales is all about conversations. But it's if you're trying to do a sale that isn't as aggressive, because some people are aggressive, not so much in a creative space, you guys don't know how to sell, most of you, then you need to do everything you can to attract that person. So you have to really be in love. Like, for me, as someone who deals with a lot of creatives, whether it's in TV, film, books, comic books, I am very obsessed with you. I'm always curious about, why do you guys do the things you do? Why do it this way? Where'd you hear that from? Oh, that's interesting. Like, I ask a lot of questions to people when they ask to me, because I'm always like, what do I need to say? How do I need to say it? How do I need to phrase this thing to get you to to do a certain thing? And when I do this, how do you react to me? You know, I'm very much obsessed and interested in you guys in that way. But I also need to know how to, you know, make you behave, right? Because we're in comics in particular, very male dominated, you know, space, right? And guys can get extremely rough, and you got to learn how to, you know, for me, you have to learn how to defend yourself in this space, because, you know, you've seen some of my videos and some of the comics and me kind of just stopping people like, that's not how we, you know, you're going to behave. You're going to be a good boy over here if you want to stay over here, right?
Well, and that's what I think attracts a lot of people to you, is you're just, well, maybe me. It's the no nonsense, no BS. You know, this is the way it's going to be. Shut up. Go sit down. You know, that's what your channel to me is all about.
I know. It attracts the most amazing people. I have made videos that, damn, that kind of, did come out. I'm like, oh, that was kind of rough. Maybe I, you know, slow down. But it's like people like, oh, yeah,
it's like,
tell me more.
What you need to hear, not what they want to hear. Right.
Well, because there's a lot of people in the comics and kind of, you know, book us this space where, oh, it's okay, and give you a story. And I'm like, bitch, do you got bills to pay? It's like, what are you doing? You're going to bankrupt yourself. You're going to be homeless. I don't want you to be homeless. I don't want another notification that someone passed away over something that possibly could have been preventable, right? You know, because I've had, we lost a lot of comic book publishers because our friend in Diamond, if you've been keeping up with that, I know you're very familiar with them, but just a lot of people I knew personally who lost their jobs and livelihoods that were writing for all these other publishers that they can't get their books. And the situation now has deteriorated with some new news, but I also know.
Oh, really? I haven't heard anything lately, but I hated Diamond 15 years ago when I was running my store. They were just as bad.
Yeah, they're horrible. Well, folks, I've had my run-ins with Diamond for a lot of reasons, and I think most people's experience is the same with that. But they kind of had a chokehold on comic books, hobbyist stores, and even game publishers. A lot of the game publishers are not going to be here because they still can't get the damn games that they've invested $1 million in.
Because they went exclusive with Alliance. I used to argue with these publishers when I had my store. Do not go exclusive Alliance. Stop it.
It's just, you know, like, it's like, I know people personally, they cannot get their freaking games. If they can't get this loan, they will not be here. And, you know, for a lot of people that hurt them extremely financially. I know folks that, I've lost about 6 to 7 people in the comics industry who are writers, or artists in the last few months, like some things accident, but a lot of stuff was more preventable ish things, but that's what happens. And not enough of that story, I think, of those stories are taken seriously.
100%.
Which is why I decided, like, okay, I'm going to put myself out there in this way, because the things I talk about on my channel, I've always talked about at conventions. I've always talked about for years for people. This isn't new information, not the first time. I've talked about this for a very long time. But I was like, you know what? No one else is really talking about this stuff. And I've had the privilege of working in multiple places in entertainment to understand how different sections of stuff, like comics works this way, book publishing tends to work this way. If you're indie, whatever that means, you know, you have to do this, and you know, the gaming industry and how that, so I can share that information, because most people are going to bounce between one or two of those things. So here's the information that you know kind of need to have, and do with it as you know, do as that you will. But like, I know artists that have Patreons where they're making $20,000 a month from their patron. So they they've achieved a place where, you know what, they don't have to worry about a publisher maybe paying you or disappearing in the wind or deciding not to pay you. There are plenty of stories folks can look up about publishers that have not paid their artists. They have not paid their writers, and everyone stays silent until something happens and they say, oh yeah, I didn't get paid, right? Because I know that's common. I have folks right now who are still surprised that some publishers I work with in comics actually paid me. They're like, how'd you get paid? Because I still ain't got paid. I'm the one who wrote the book. I was like, yeah. So, yeah, man. About that. Yeah, I, you know, but that's kind of, you know, that's kind of how these industries go. So it's like, I was in music, and music is rough. That's not an easy place to be. And if you can if you can get through the music industry, most of this other stuff, it's fine, because this music industry, TV and film is nutty too. And I'm in both. right? And so if you can get through that, you can get through anything that happens in publishing. You can get through anything that happens in comics, because you know the BS is going to come on one side or the other. So it's just how you navigate it. And from a marketing perspective in comics, there's other factors for the American side. So any of the American folks here. For you guys, you got to understand that we literally had very strict laws and agreements here in the comics industry that has affected it to this day. You also have the fact that there's a whole bunch of banned graphic novels and other books that cannot be sold in certain states. That's a whole thing if anyone pays attention to that. So you might be making a book that cannot be legally sold in certain states that you are going to be doing conventions in. So make sure you check so that you don't wind up in a situation where someone wants to be that person and report you, because then you can wind up in a really bad situation that you don't need to be in, because that's kind of the atmosphere we're in. I have writers that I know who have books at Scholastic that cannot be sold in a whole bunch of other places because the writer is Black or the main characters are Black, because that fits under DEI. And the way it was built into the system in Scholastic, when the school boards go to order from them to, you know, come to the school, there was just a button. It doesn't distinguish what the book is about, right? The book could be like, there's certain school districts who can't turn around and order Jackie Robinson books, history books, the biographies, because it fits under that. So they never see it, right? And that was a fight going on for 2 and 3 years by a bunch of librarians kind of getting on them about having it. But that is kind of where it is. So if you have a comic, like, hey, I have a couple of mentees who want to get their comics in libraries. And there's certain library systems that can't have them, right?
Right.
So that's something that you might face as a creator making certain types of content. So just, you don't want somebody's crazy parent coming after you. Right. Because that can happen, but just be aware when you're trying to get your comic into other places. A library system would be beautiful to get your graphic novel. Like if it's a comic, it has to be a graphic novel. You have to make sure that the age of the reader matters. You can't have certain drawings in certain books that you say are for middle grade. So make sure that checks everything. And if those are things, there's a whole process that goes for, it's very long, but for some people I have, that's what they eventually want to do. So they're going through that process, right? But most of you don't care. You want it like, hey, I want it in a comic book store. Well, let me tell you something about comic book stores. Most comics, there are about less than 3,000 comic book stores in the U.S., okay, that are anything considered comic book store. The other thing is most of them are multi-purpose. Most of them are hobbyist shops that happen to sell comics.
They happen to have comics, yep.
Yeah, they have a little rack.
That was me.
See?
I had a rack. I wasn't a comic book store, right? I was a hobby shop that had a comic book rack.
Right. Yeah, so hobbyists, they have a comic book shop. So that's kind of what they are. So they don't have a lot of comics, right? They have more board games or, other stuff going on, right? And that's just kind of most of the stores have. And then most people don't live near comic book shops in the first place. So them trying to buy your comic is only if they are willing to pay $200 to $300 for a weekend to go to most conventions. So they're paying that money to get to the convention, probably have to park their car somewhere. It's going to cost them another $30 to $50. And they haven't even stepped inside the convention yet. Right. So
yeah, they've gotten out of control. These conventions need to simmer down a little bit.
Yeah, it's very expensive. And I'm in a city where there's nothing but freaking conventions. Like every other weekend, I can go to 3 conventions a weekend if I want to, because they're all happening at the same time. And if I want to drive to another state over here, I can go to 20 other conventions. That's how crazy it is. But they're all around. So they're all, a lot of them are very expensive. It's not cost effective for most people. So, and not even including like the New York Comic Cons and the San Diego's you can turn around and get in there. They're very expensive. So by the time they get to you, someone is already out of pocket close to $400 in a lot of cases. Even if it's just them. Imagine if they have 2 or 3 kids with them, right? So you got to understand, like, you getting, peed off at the people walking past your book. That person don't got no money sometimes. I was telling them, like, people budget. When me and my friends went to conventions and I wasn't working that convention, we would budget. I'm like, all right, I don't spend like $300 on $150, $156, $70 ticket. I got to get there. I got to park my car. It's going to cost me $30 for that day. I have 2 more days of this convention. I only got $150 I could spend, and I know 3 artists I'm going to because I'm going to get my print and I'm going to get, you know, whatever two things from these artists, because I always support them because I like their art. So I'm going to go to them first. Once I finish with them, whatever I got left, I still got to eat something in here. And if I have a little bit of money on the side, I might buy something else. But my money's already spent before I got to the convention. I already
before you
know
get,
mentally.
Get there. Yeah.
You know, who I'm spending my money with, right? Like, and that's the thought process of a lot of advanced convention goers, those who go to conventions every year, and we know how to work it. And so, like, keeping your prices in a way that makes you a no-brainer, even if they don't know you, having something on your table that is easily accessible, like if someone has 10 bucks they can throw down, is really important because it might be the only introduction that they can afford to have with you at that moment. But if it's that, right. You know, if it's that $10 thing, like, I don't know, you know, I don't know. Let's say it's this and
bookmark.
I say, okay, this is one of ours. Let's say this is $10. Cool. Well, when I pack this thing, I'm going to have a little card attached. I'm like, hey, go here. You're going to get something else for free. It's a free story. So I can introduce them into my world and I can collect the email. So after the convention is over, I can email them, hey, thank you so much for supporting me. I really appreciate your 10 bucks. Oh, here's that free story. You know, go ahead and read. Let me know what you got. So now I introduced that person to my world and they didn't have to spend $20, $30 on a thing, but I did get $10. So I sold one of these. I still made my profit individually on what this cost for me to produce. And I've introduced them. So the next time they see me at a convention or the next time maybe they see me online and they maybe, oh, okay, it's payday. They do have 20 bucks. They can buy that story from me. They read the other one. They enjoyed it. They are ready to make that next $20 purchase that they didn't have at that time because, once again, all the money went to the place it was going to get and all they had was 10 bucks. So thinking about how you play your conventions that way for a lot of people is like stuff that folks don't consider. And I'm like, have something low price, put something in there, get the email, have something that after they leave that convention, you can send to them. Always thank them for showing up to your table. Hey, thank you so much for on your table. Hopefully I'll see you again next year. Or I'm going to this other convention. By the way, I have something for you because I just appreciate you. It's my first convention or second or whatever you say, right? Engaging in that conversation is really important for all those who are going to be doing their first conventions or even my veteran convention vendors and Artist Alley, you know, on the vendor floor. You all can do that. You could all do that too. Because what I do tend to see is it's gotten better with people collecting emails, but you know, they have this big pad of maybe 200 emails and now they have to go home and manually type that thing in. So everyone gets discouraged and don't do it. And then they have to email the person whose email they asked for.
Okay. I'm old. So, I mean, that just, you know, that would drive me up a wall. If I, you're going to give, right? I don't care if you write it, whatever. I'm using that email.
I know. It's like, cause they're like, it's like, you know how many people, every time I see, cause I'm big on that. Cause I'm a marketer, right? This is what
right,
I'm going to do.
Right.
I was like, oh, your email, cool. And I'll put my name on it. I have yet, it's been 3 years. I have seen you 7 different times. I have given you my email 7 different times. I have still yet to see an email from you. Right.
Well, if you want, I'll send you my my link tree real quick. If you want to give me your email, you'll definitely get emails from me.
Yeah, you'll get emails.
Like you get multiple a week. I mean, so I discovered Substack a couple months ago, and I love it. Like, it's, well, because, I mean, you can post, like, just regular posts. You can do, like, you know, full newsletters. You can do video. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can do all kinds of stuff in there.
Yeah, you can do the podcast function is newish, so that's added on there. They're pretty much are turning into the medium, what medium was known as, is what they're trying, a whole media production. They have a huge comic book audience over there.
Yeah, I just started it maybe a month ago. I'm not getting any traction yet, but it'll come. You're gonna help me with that later,
apparently.
but no, like, I love the, so far I've loved the format because, like, I don't have a website, so it's given me a place to do, like, a blog post. It's replacing my website, basically. Every episode, I have a blog post with like a 3 to 5 minute clip of the episode, right? And then the write up. And then I'll do, you know, just post random like clips like I do on TikTok or whatever. You just throw them on there too. Or you can just say something. Like, it's really cool.
I will say on Substack, because there's always some issues on, like, once again, these are more advanced users having the issue versus someone new to it. So I like, there's nuance to every little thing. I will always say that if it's on Substack, any emails that you get, make sure that you are able, you have your CSV and protected. This is for anybody who's using any type of, we call them ESPs, email service providers, because Substack is still kind of sort of email service provider, kind of sort of not, because of it decided to go, we're going to be like a place where you can create your whole content stack is what they're trying to do. Make sure you back up your emails into like a Excel or CSV. Make sure you do that all the time. You can have it set up with any type of automation, like a Zapier product or Make, and have it that every time someone subscribes to your Substack, that email also gets saved as somewhere else into like a Google Sheet, and you can create an automation. You can create your different automations out of that. Just a little slightly advanced thing. You just want to back up your list.
We're learning here, kids.
Yeah, so like you just want to back up your list. Your like email, I know a lot of you don't like doing email, but it could be, I teach it to be real simple. It's not, an email doesn't have to be a full production. One of my lives, I kind of wrote an email just a la carte, right? And email is, the purpose of email is to build the relationship. It is the relationship building platform, right? You are emailing people to bond with people, to let people know. If they want to unsubscribe, let them go. Because remember, in most email platforms, you're paying per those emails. So if someone leaves, that's not bad. It's saving you money. And, you know, in a long run.
They're not going to do anything with it anyway. Right.
Right. So it's like, if they, you know, they, if people decide, oh, I don't really like your style, I don't like your stuff, I'm going to take off. I say, cool, no problem. I'll be here. If you want to jump on later, I don't really care. But, you know, you're gonna hear from me often because I'm trying to build a relationship. I want to know, like, what you like and don't like. I want you to know a little bit about the things I'm creating or the things I'm doing or the trouble that I am having. And maybe one of you knows the answer to something I don't know. Like, for instance, I've coached a bunch of creators in comics and board games on this. And I was like, look, you want to know what places you probably should go for a convention. If you build your email list big enough, you can ask people, hey, I am planning my conventions for 2026. I am thinking of going to 3-4 conventions in these 2 states. Have any of you guys ever gone? Do you think you're going? Please let me know. Let me know anything about the building. I've never gone there before. I've never been to this place. Please help me. People want to help. You will get suggestions of hotels, places to eat. You know, you might even mess up and find someone who, on your list who volunteers at that convention, you know, and get some extra things, you know. You don't realize how much people will help a creator out just to help you out, you know, just by asking. So building that and talking to people often and looking at it as a communication channel is great. Like, you could even... like for most of the folks that I deal with who are the artists, you know, they make their money off of, you know, getting some commission. So what they like to do is, I taught one and she does this wonderfully. She's got it down pat. I'm so happy for her because I know how she makes her money good. What she does is, I was like, look, everybody knows you for working for X, but they love you, but they like you and the stuff you draw. I was like, just have them pre-order the commission, like pre-sell the commission. Like, you can do some commission before, but you can have them just pick it up. So when she streams, so it's like, when you stream, have your email list. So she got like a few thousand people on her email list now. I was like, look, say, hey, I'm going to these X conventions. Like, hey, I'm taking some pre-orders for some commissions. So if you want a commission, these are the prices. You could pay for it right now. But once I get to 10, that's all I can do per convention, right? And she sells out her commissions before she hits the convention. 2 weeks before she hits the convention, all her commissions are booked up. I said, okay, now you do this. You want to know how much inventory you need to carry with you, right? I said, pre-sell the inventory. Just be like, hey, whoever's going to X convention, I am going to be taking X, Y, and Z with me, whatever the prints are or whatever the book is, right? This is what they're going to be. If you get there, I will sign it while I am there. pre-order here so that when you get up there, I know you need to go to different places. You don't have to wait online. Just give me this receipt and we'll just get it to you and get you out the way and do that. She does that. She sells like $4,000 worth of prints doing that.
Wow.
Like each and every time, right? And she then it helps her because then she knows how much she needs to carry of those prints. Like she has to have her orders, and then she'll have maybe 20 to 50 more or whatever, right? So it helps us plan her inventory.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so she, like I said, do that. Whatever you can, like my artist, like whatever you can. The writers can do this too with your books, if you build your email list. Over time, as you're building this list and you're emailing them often, I would say email them every day. I know most of you are not going to do that. Y'all want to email once a month, once a quarter. That's not enough. Once a week.
I agree with that.
Yeah, once a week is kind of like the minimum. You need to probably email.
I'm glad you said that because like I was worried about that with Substack because Substack will... Like you send it's an email every time you post, right? And I was worried it might have been too much, but no, I think I kind of agree that it should be having two or three a week is okay.
Yeah, having two or three a week is because remember, most time people are not going to read it. And this is what a lot of people do. People will wait for like, I have people on one email list that we do. I know I don't worry as open rates as much because I know it's hitting the inbox. It's just they like to read everything in bulk. So they'll take a Sunday and read every single email for the week. That's when you get all of a sudden emails like, damn, this email went out like 10 days ago. And all of a sudden they're reading all the emails. So they read in stats, you know, a lot of times. So people do that. It's like, okay, so, you know, don't worry about it as long as, you know, it doesn't look too bad. So people read that, especially if you write your emails in a way that is very, there's emails that I write that are very story driven, right? And so that is kind of, you know, that's very important depending on what you do. Like I tell my writers, I'm like, dude, you write allegedly for a living. You should be able to write some of the best, most interesting emails. They can't. It cracks me up. I'm like, dude, take a little bit of your story that they might have read about this character, some quirks. Why? Because if they're really into your character, especially if fans, they're going to want to know little weird things. You can literally have an email a week that's dedicated to a quirk about a character that you've heard that they love. And that's your one email. Okay, so you always know what that email is going to be about, right? You always have an email about, hey, this is where you are, progress, right? It's like a progress report. So the email's not long. Hey, guys, I'm just trying to keep myself accountable. You know, I've been working on these two comments. This is where I'm at. I've written 3 pages of it, of this one. I've written 2 pages of blah, blah, blah. And we're still figuring out production. Anyway, how you guys doing? This is where I am productivity-wise. All your ADHD people would love it because they always want accountability. So someone doing something like that, that's your second email. Okay, this person is trying to get this stuff done. Even if it failed, hey, I screwed up this week. I wasn't feeling it. My mental health wasn't there. I'm really struggling, so I didn't get a thing ready. So what I learned this week is, you know, I need to take a break. How about you? Now you're going to get engagement because people are going to reply to you having those weeks where they're not feeling all that well. And so now they sympathize with you and they empathize with you because you're being real. So the same thing that you're going to do as a video on TikTok and tell your business, write in an email and tell your business.
Put it in an email.
Yeah, put it in an email. So now you got 2 emails already. One on a quirky thing about a character that people love. Another one is progress on something that you currently doing or you struggle with. You know, and the third one could be something that maybe you are really into Star Wars. Like, hey, this email's kind of weird, but I'm kind of a fan of sci-fi and Star Wars and, you know, Deep Space Nine and Star Trek's my favorite thing. These are my 3 favorite characters. What about yours? I just want to talk. This is, you know, Mondays You Love. And it's just talked about something that you love. So it's not harder. It's like, hey, I love this so far. This has been really cool. It could be a book suggestion. You can use it as a way to cross promote a friend's book. So if Mondays You Love is like, hey, I like Star Wars. Oh, I'm reading this book by so-and-so. They're an indie creator on TikTok. You should check them out. So now you're promoting someone else. And maybe somebody will also want to promote you. So you leave that, you know, that email open like that. So now you got 3 different email ideas during the week. You get the same thing. One about your character, one about progress on work. Another one is just talking about something you love or talking about your pet. Most of them got pets, you know. So this is more stuff that you probably would be posting on TikTok about, you just switch it up to an email. There's nothing formal. There's no big headline and 30-page like traditional newsletter. It's just, it looks more like a note to a friend. That's how you need to write your emails. They're friendly notes to a friend. And then, you know, you got a big announcement. Hey, this is my big announcement. Publishing for this is there. Kickstarter for this day. I'll be in Chicago, blah, blah, blah. Then you got those emails that go out. But the rest of the emails, keep them just nice and light. If, you know, it's for beginners, nice and light. Something funny about yourself, something that you accomplished or struggling with, your progress report to writing something that they're waiting for, and some inside information about a character or a story that is already out. Right now, simple. See how we broke that down real nice and simple? This stuff can take you like 5 to 7 minutes.
I took notes.
See? But that's how I teach people writing emails. Like, if you can do this, right, then I can teach you how to write other types of emails. Because like, well, Lauren, how do you sell? I said, all this is soft selling because the first sale you got to make is you.
You.
You are the first sale.
You.
Because it's you in front of the camera. It's you in front of the, you know, trying to promote your stuff. So you are the first sale. They got to buy into you. The second thing is they got to buy into whatever the thing you're doing. As a comic book artist or as a writer, they have to be able to buy into you. And that's having personal things like, hey, you got to, like Goblin Grimm, who makes me spend my money, is an artist known for doing art on some of Hell's Bells, has a cat called Zelda. And I often, when I'm in their videos, will mention, where's Zelda? Where's your manager? I need to speak, you know, I need to speak to the manager because what Goblin Grimm decides to do is, hey, everybody, I got my packages today. And then he's opening his pack with all this cool art and pens. And look, they hand signed it. Look, they stamped it and wax. And it's like, I'm a collector. This is like crap. I like that kind of stuff. I'm like, ooh, who's the artist for this one? They got a Patreon? I can buy that? And there goes my money. It's like, what Goblin Grimm does there could literally be an email, but like, hey, this is my mail check-in. You know me, I like to support, you know, small businesses, and this is what I got in. This is so-and-so from blah, blah, blah. Their Patreon is here. And have an image of what you got from them. Email. Go support them. I love their stuff. See you guys next time. Beautiful email. Done.
So on this topic, to circle back, because I've been wanting to ask this question for a while, because you said it a while ago. In marketing to all this stuff and doing the emails, you were talking about earlier the finding your right audience and getting to know your right audience. What is a tip or a way to find that audience or figure out what your audience is or who your audience is?
Oh, that's a good question. Now, what most people do.
I mean, this ain't no hobby. No, it is a hobby. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you see? Like, it's a good question because what happens is when people tend to get to me, they've already created the book. So it's like, now I'm trying to market this thing. I was like, we might find out that this ain't going to work, you know, through the process, right? Because usually I'm like, the best thing to do is, and I gave this out on one of my Threads accounts. I was like, the best thing you can do if you want to write and kind of have figure some realm of possible success, right, is look around the things that are working in terms of, and sometimes you could just buy tools like SEMrush and all that stuff for like a month just to look up what people are Googling, right? Like what kind of stuff. Yep. And then like, you know what? I already like this type of genre, so I'll just pick that one because I see there's search volume around it, or, you know, there's people buying it already. So I can create a story in there, right? And that'll be the nicer way of doing things. So at least you know there's some type of addressable market in the first place, right? But if you've already created the thing, right, you're kind of locked in. Now you got to try to take this thing you've already spent this money and time on and try to see if there's an audience for it, especially if, like, you know, you haven't done a Kickstarter yet or you have done a Kickstarter and like, oh, I got 60 people and that's because I only need, you know, $1,500. I was like, yeah, but that might be the only people who buy that thing. You know, that's just the nature of the game. When you're looking for your audience, like one way to do it, if you want to do it the fast way, that would be ads. Ads are the fastest way to find out if there's an audience for that thing real quick. The thing is, you got to be okay with, you know, lighting your money on fire.
Money on
fire.
Okay with it, right? You said this in your live the other day.
Yeah, I was like, it'll help you. You'll find out very quickly, oh, shoot, there is not an audience for this. Or there is an audience for this. You know, that could be that is the fastest way to find things out, you know? And I'm like, well, if you're ready to burn about $500 to $600 to figure that out quickly, then that's the way to go. Just like, all right, get the ad on Meta and IG, let it go, let multiple ads go, spending like, you know, $5 per ad, and just let it go and see what the reaction to the actual thing is. If you're getting more positive and people are saying, hey, where can I find this? You know, why can't I find this thing? Because what you want is an engagement ad. You're not trying to sell people. You're literally just trying to get them to engage with the actual content and art. That's where you get the cheaper ads.
What's the ask in the ad? Is there not one?
Well, you're not necessarily like the ask might be, hey, get this free story. If you have like a panel, you know, a sheet that you can kind of give away, like so you can build your list. And but you're trying to figure out, because remember, you already created the damn thing, right? So the ax might be that, or the ax might be just, hey, I got this character, I have this story, and you're showing art and you're showing some description about what this story, you know, is about, and be like, hey, do you like this? Or because you're trying to, you're doing the research after the fact of creating the thing, right?
Right.
And that's what you did. So like with these, I did that. My artist created the art and I tested it out with ads on Meta, so Facebook and IG. And I was just testing to see how people were going to react to it. This is before I made the product. Like there's the, I had those original art sketches and I put it out and I launched ads for like 2 or 3 years, getting the feedback and engagement to see if there was a market of people who were, thought it looked cool to people. Hey, is there, what is this going to be? So I built a list off of that because I didn't know if it was going to, like the bookmarks were secondary. We were going to do cards, right? But I had to figure out if the art was going to work. So we just had test runs done and we tested that thing out first. And I spent my money and did the research. Like, okay. Because I was like, yeah, I think there's a market for it. But let me see if I can kind of gauge who that specifically was going to be. So when I created the thing, I was like, at least I know the art works. It's not the art. It's just they don't want it on a t-shirt. They want it on this thing. Because I have to kind of eliminate that process of elimination. Because you can have a good story as a comic, but the art, people don't like the art. Right. And that's going to stop people. Right. And art is a good chunk of the damn comic. Right. So you could, it could stop you from getting sales and, you know, that could be a thing. So usually if you have test pages with an artist and you're testing it out, that's a good, I told my other artists, I was like, if you have something you're testing out, make, do a test panel on different art styles and throw it out there and spend like $100 on each one. And see what happens, because if people don't like the art, you ain't going to sell that comic, honey. It's just not going to happen. That's just the nature of the game, because it's a comic, not a novel, right? Right? The other thing you could do, remember, that's the fast way. Burn your money, but it's okay because you already know how much you're burning, and it's all right. And the other way to do it is there are plenty of Facebook groups that you can go into that like indie comics or like comics in general, but there's also like fandom niche groups out there. And you can go in there, go to the moderator. Sometimes you might have to ask permission. Be like, hey, listen, I'm working on a comic project. I just want to see what people's opinion is. I don't even know if I'm going forward. It's okay for me to post. I'm just kind of take a poll, trying to figure things out. A lot of them are like, sure, why not? Now, when you do that, you might get roasted. Roasted real bad. But you rather know that this may not work and adjust, or, you know, if people love it, then you know who you definitely know what your audience is. Like if you're in the one of the Facebook groups that's all about people who love fantasy and go to fantasy balls, and you have a fantasy story and you put it in there and you ask, you know, for a poll, hey, I really need feedback. I don't even know if I should sell this, whatever the case may be. People usually will give their opinion on something and be, I find in some groups, more gracious than others. But if you have a fantasy comic and it's like, yo, I want to read this. When is this coming out? Great. It's working. You've had 50 comments. You had 100 comments. Good. You're probably in a good spot, right? That's how you're going to know if you've already kind of done a lot of that
work. So you got to know your genre, too, beforehand. So
right, you know your genre.
Don't put a kid's book in a fantasy group page on Facebook. That ain't the right thing to do.
Yeah. You know, it's like,
you got to know your...
Yeah, you gotta know your genre.
It's almost funny because, like, my comic is more of a kid's book, kid's comic, than it is, like, anything else.
A small town.
tucked inside a quiet comic shop. Something magical is waking up. Billy never felt like he belonged. A new school, a couple of bullies, and no real friends. But everything changes when he finds a forgotten comic in the dollar box. From the pages of a comic comes a tiny shape-shifting hero, determined to help Billy find his confidence. He whispers encouragement, he sneaks through the halls, and he shows Billy the hero he can become. Because sometimes all it takes is one unexpected friend to help you rewrite your story. From the dollar bin to the real world, The Chronicles of Panel Pete, an all-ages fantasy one-shot adventure. A story about courage, friendship, and the magic waiting in every comic shop. Created and written by A.J. Ryman. Illustrated and co-written by Mike Algier. Are you ready for issue one? We don't just talk about comics. We made one.
And it's called The Chronicles of Panel Pete.
At Talking Comics, we interview creators, show off our comic hauls,
play fun games, and show what we're learning firsthand.
Get a free preview of The Chronicles of Panel Pete by subscribing to our Substack.
Watch the trailer and all the video episodes on YouTube.
Or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow along, like, subscribe.
You know, it's like a coming of age story, right? And so, but I didn't realize that when I wrote it. It took till after I wrote it to like realize that. To figure it out.
Yeah, like a shonen, which is it's inherently the tropes in shonen is like it's geared towards boys 12 to I think 16 or something like that. Usually it's coming of age story, all of them. It's about the whole genre is about people overcoming obstacles and building confidence. Like, that's literally the tropes in like a shonen manga, right? Versus other types of manga, right? So you always, like when I see the guys, you know, the non-Japanese guys do, I'm like, oh, I'm doing a manga. And I'm like, this looks like a shonen. And he's like, yeah, I was like, all right, then your audience, you're gearing towards a comic that is, the story is supposed to be geared to a 12-year-old boy and up, right? So who are you selling to? Because if you can't run ads to people below 18.
Right.
So, like, you know, and
I don't
you
have
be
that
careful.
Issue.
Yeah, yeah, right. You got to be careful because, you know, mommy and daddy is giving them the money to buy it, or they're going to buy it. And yes, there's plenty of adults who do read shonen and everything else. Absolutely. But you're going to attract a lot of kids. So you got to be careful what you say in these ads. You got to be careful what you say on your profile. Because, yes, you're going to attract adults, but you're also going to attract a lot of kids. So you just got to be all around, you know, careful about what you do and how you say it and what you get caught up in. Like, don't be sending no nasty pics to nobody. And then it becomes public discourse on any social media platform, because that's not, you got too many kids on your profile for that.
Right. 100%. Well, and that's like, you know, that's something I've been dancing around anyway because of the kid, right? Like, my kid's on this podcast with me, you know, we do an episode a week, just her and I, right? You know, so that's something that I've been trying to figure out how to navigate and shield behind and, you know, shield her from, you know, any kind of craziness. And
yeah,
it's crazy.
There's forget the name, but there, I think Star Wars and Son or something like that. There is a podcast that was started a few years ago. It's a father and son, and they were just watching Star Wars movies, and it was like his first time watching it, and then they would just do a podcast and talk about it in the shows. And they've grown to, like, they got invited to like Star Wars Celebration and stuff. It's so awesome. Cute. It's a father son podcast. It is so cute. It is very wholesome. And as far as I know, people tend to be calmer with them, because it's nothing. It's more like he's a kid. He's like, at the time, I think he was maybe 8 or 9 or something like that, right?
Right.
So it's like, this is the first time he saw, or, you know, Revenge of the Sith. He's never seen it before, and he's with his dad, and his dad has, of course, seen it before, and is like,
of course,
you know, and it's very cute. But they also read some of the books, and they talk about it, and it's a very wholesome podcast. So now Star Wars community can be really rough. As a Star Wars fan, I know the fandom menace, and they can be extremely cruel, but hopefully they haven't had too much blowback. But I think overall people are more like, just chill. This is a kid.
Yeah.
Let him have his enjoyment. He's watching all the things.
She's the star of the show. I mean, and I already know that. You know, the people love Annika for, you know, our episode. You know, they love her, which is great. I'm just the co-host. But then it turned it, because that's how it started. It was just her and I just doing something fun, spend time together, talk about comics. I had no idea I was going to write a comic. No clue.
You see,
it wasn't until somebody reached. Well, I got reached out by another guy. I don't know if you know Jeff Haas. He's a marketer. He kind of markets some comic books. And he just emailed me. I had this random email out of the blue. You know, we had like 8 episodes out. And he's like, would you do an interview? And I'm like, sure. I'll try it. Never done it before. And so I did one, like, and released it. It was like episode 11. And I was like, I had a lot of fun. And then he sent me a couple more. And then other people started reaching out, wanting to be on. And I'm like, I actually enjoy this. And it actually helped me. Because I could take this part of it a lot more seriously and actually, you know, I don't know, just it helped me loosen up on the episodes with my daughter, right? Because I felt like in the beginning I was holding her back way too much, right? Trying to make it a good production and a good thing, right? Now I can just be, you know, all right, it is what it is, right? This is the episode of me and my daughter. I get to have the more serious conversations. And then now she's even joined some of the, you know, with T.S. Luther, she joined with several of them. She's joined the interview one sometimes and loves it. So it's evolving into a lot more than I ever thought it would. And it's a lot of fun. And I want to keep it going. And that's why we're going to talk later.
If you ever find them, it's a
I'll have to look for them.
It's very cute. It's like from the beginning all the way through. And I found out he has a brother. So that, and they came in a little episode and on one of the movies that came out. And they just like, first time seeing it there. I think it started that way. I think it was during a, you know, shutdowns. What else can you do? Your son is, house with your child. What can we father son do? Because we can't go anywhere. So it's become a beautiful thing.
That's amazing. I've got a whole page of notes. This is amazing.
I hope that's good.
I think it's good. Normally, I just write on the side, you know, a couple things I want to remember or I thought were cool so I can highlight it to myself later when I'm editing. You know, no, this has been awesome. I'm going to do my fun questions and then we'll cut the episode. But
okay.
I'll put this in the front, that part in the front. I got to write time, 128. All right, so who is your first favorite superhero or comic character?
Comic character. Now, I'm saying this what people know. I say, you know, superhero comics are not my favorite comics.
Right. I say comic character as well.
Yeah, comic character. Not my favorite. But funny enough, I can tell you my favorite comic book villain is actually Darkseid.
Okay.
Favorite comic book villain is Darkseid. Probably my favorite. If we're talking about superhero, just to keep it cute, I don't know. It's between probably Superman, accidentally, or Batman, because I like animation more. But I've watched old Superman shows when it was black and white, and it was the propaganda films that was him against the Germans.
Oh yeah.
So way the back when that's what they were pumping out. So to me, that's my introduction to Superman.
Right.
He's faster than speeding bullet. Like that one, that intro, like to me.
So, I remember that.
Yeah. And the only comic that was in my house was, and I read this was years ago, The Death of Superman. And it was Superman versus Doomsday. So I read that over 200 times with Superman.
Was that the first comic book you ever read?
First comic book that I ever read, but not the first comic, because I actually am a big lover of comic strips, because comic strips, well, we used to call them the funnies.
The funny stories, yep.
That's what you had access to, because that's when my mother worked, that's what she would read. So technically, like Peanuts, Charlie Brown, yep. The Boondocks was a comic strip before it was it was an animated TV show. You know, Gilbert, that kind of stuff, Garfield. So a lot of my first favorite comics were technically comic strips and newspapers. But if we're talking about superhero comics, then probably Superman edges out above Batman. But my favorite supervillain is definitely Darkseid, hands down.
Do you have a favorite current series?
Now this is a little complicated. Something is Killing the Children. I'm enjoying as a horror. Okay. But the funny thing is, it's not that I enjoy that series so much, like a fangirl of it. It's more so it's the spits of the spinoffs that I like. There's one particular spinoff called The House of Butcher, which they only have one issue for. Oh. I've read that multiple times. I enjoy Maxine's storyline in that because you see her in some of the other spinoff comics, and I think she's in later on issues of Main Scene. I don't want to go too into that because it's a whole ecosystem, but the comics that I go back that I'm like, oh, let me read that again, is The House of Butcher, which is a spinoff of Something is Killing the Children in terms of that. And anything else that I'm reading over, I think one is called Super Something. I just got that from a Kickstarter. That was a webtoon that they printed out. So those are kind of my top that I'll pick up often. But in terms of series of stuff, Stranger Comics, Niobe, which has a lot of series in it. So if you check out Stranger Comics, I do love their fantasy comics. The world is very expansive. I particularly read a lot of the Niobe series and the things around it. So if you want to check that out, if you like dark fantasy things, it's a nice series to dive into.
Very cool. All right, if you could live in any comic book universe, which one would you choose?
Oh, geez, they're all terrible. Like, comic books are about trauma, people. Jesus.
Come on, we just talked about the funny stories. You could live in Peanuts or, you know, Garfield.
Well, I kind of live in Garfield because I have a cat.
Yeah, okay.
Every day.
Does he eat lasagna?
Yeah, my last cat was more Garfield lasagna type. He'd eating human food. This one is, kind of like, he's nosy, like literally nosy. He goes in, he doesn't want to eat the human food, but he wants to smell it first.
Smell it.
Gotcha. Like, are you smelling for poison or something? I need to know, because then you don't want it. You don't want it, but you're like, you'll cry bloody murder if I don't just, okay, this is all right. And then disinterested the rest of the time. Like, I don't understand what's up with my cat. So I kind of live some weird Garf. The Secret Life of Pets movie is kind of what I think I'm living most of the time. But let's see, is there a world? The stuff I like to read ain't the world you want.
Yeah, you don't want to live in those.
Yeah, because remember, I like horror stuff. So
right, you're the horror fan.
Yeah, so all my books, I'm like, not that world. Hell no. This one got giant spiders. I don't think there's a... Okay, no, that's horrible too. That is a horror.
Yeah, I know.
I got a slasher comic somewhere around here. Like, do I have a nice comic where it's not like that? Where I have a Conan like comic around here. Like, yeah, even then I won't be in.
No,
Conan.
Even then I don't want to live in that. No.
Yeah, and you damn sure don't want to live in Gotham City.
Nope. Not at all.
Like, I guess if people say, "Oh, if you watch," like I have like some Black Panther comics, old ones from like the world of Wakanda. But I don't revisit them like that. Like, and even then, if you read some stuff going on, yeah, I don't think you necessarily want to live the experience of the stories, because that's where the great flood happened and crap. So if I'm in there, I can't swim. I probably would get killed. So now you made me realize a lot of comics I'm reading, I probably would, if I'm in them personally, I probably wouldn't make it. I mean, I even have a Wild Cards comic, which is George R. R. Martin's story turned into a comic book, which is a fascinating world where, you know, the people who have superpowers or, you know, super whatever. But even then, it's like, damn, it's pretty cruddy. Like, the last one I read, like, everybody was getting killed by something that mutated to some monster. I'm sorry. I don't think I got a comic.
We're going to stick with, Secret Life of Pets.
Yeah, we're going to stick. I think that's the safest.
The safest stuff. One. I like that.
Yeah.
If you could have any superpower, which would you choose?
There's a lot of good superpowers out there. And I know somebody's going to watch it. Like, Lauren, did you say you like super? I said, no. If you listen, I said, I don't like to particularly go into Marvel DC universe like that. I have read plenty of superhero comics and stuff like that. But I'm the nerd that learns the background. Like, I know the origins of characters and things like that, like to an encyclopedic kind of thing. So when I read their comics and it veers so far off from it, I might get more annoyed. So there's no sense in me getting annoyed about what a writer decides they want to take you know, Daredevil or take Superman when Superman's like Jesus and they screw it up trying to do certain things with Superman. Because Superman's hard to write. He's a hard-ass character to write. Batman's an interesting character. We know who he is. We know, you know, the Bat family, that whole psychosis and crap like that. Mm-hmm. But what's superpower? Batman has no superpowers, like, except that he's really rich. Superman has a bunch
unless
of
it's absolute Batman, where he's broke.
True, for the absolute fans out there. That's why I have people like Comics Explained, because they're going to read all the comics, and I can just watch their channel and find out everything that's going on, which is why I don't have to buy the superhero comics.
There you go.
I found
you
a way
found
to save
the loophole.
Money. See, I'm a loophole. Just because I don't read them doesn't mean I don't really understand what's going on.
You know what's going on, right?
That's why. And RIP to Comics Historian. I miss many. Another great channel for my YouTubers. But superpower. I don't want to be invisible. Damn, who was superpower? Do I want to fly? Wait, if I fly, I don't know, because then I have to get luggage. But still, I can get to places faster. I think I want to say flight might be the thing.
Flight. That I think I would choose flight just because I love flying.
Yeah, because that's a place I have to get to. So it's like, well, I can put my book bag on and just shoo, and I'm there. So
And then just fly back home each night, you know? Fast flight. All right. What would be your favorite, like, which character in the world of comics or whatever would you want as your sidekick? It doesn't have to be a sidekick.
Which one is my sidekick? What crime are we not committing? We're going to be villain or we're going to be a hero? Like, my sidekick. Well, let's see. That's traditional. It could be a main character. Who would be? You know what? Tony Stark would be my sidekick.
Heck yeah. Has the money and the tech.
Yeah, money and tech. Because I love me some tech and he got money. So we're going to be comfortable no matter what we're doing.
Yep. No matter what we're doing. That's right. All right. So last one. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be?
Ooh. Let's see. I'm like traditional. I'm like the Adventures of Knights of G.
Knights of G.
Queen of comic book marketing. Nerd extraordinaire.
Ooh, see? There you go. Queen of comic book marketing. You change your TikTok to that.
Oh, well, it's funny. I was actually named that by another comic book pro. I just have never
used that.
It. Yeah, like you're just like, you're the queen of comic book marketing. I just never claimed that. But like I got called that first. I did not call myself that.
Own it.
I'm out of the
own
it. No one else is stepping up to the plate. I'm like, you supposedly know something. And you supposedly know something. And you just giving out bad information.
There's not much marketing out there. Advice, right? Marketing advice. Yeah. I don't know of many. You're one of the few. I mean, I don't do it, but like I try. I'll give just tips of what other interviewers say. You know, put those clips out. But like, that ain't a lot. You know.
Yeah,
so.
I don't really see anybody say anything. I try, like, even from an ads perspective, because I run ads for a living. I'm like, when people are running ads, like, I'm like, dude, I know this ain't working. Because you ain't spending enough, or like even with my artists, it's like there's a lot of good ads for comic books, whether on Kickstarters, individual issues that have and games that have really good freaking art on it. And therefore, what happens is people suffer from brand blindness, which is the which is what happens. Like you go to a supermarket and you gotta buy laundry detergent. That aisle, you don't even see the name of the laundry detergent. All you see is burnt orange, red, white, purple, green, and blue. When you go down that aisle, you have to stop and then really focus on, wait a minute, what version of Tide is this?
Right.
Like, that's what happens, unfortunately, with the ads, especially when people have their thing on dark mode. Like, the art is all really good, and some of you are using the same artist. Like, the art's really, like, most of it, the art is really good. It's like, damn, there's no way people are stopping to scroll, because, like, how do you beat much better art? Or people do too much with the color grading. Not like, remember, it's on a certain type of screen and they don't really pay attention to that, or they use like bright reds all the time. It's like then this when you have to think about color psychology. Like, are you irritating the crap out of somebody because the way it's reflecting off their screen, you know those little nuances can make a difference in stopping the scroll or not. But then they'll have a I purposely stop because this is my profession, so I'm going to stop and see all the things, not because I like it. And I'll be like, okay, you got this art. Okay. No description of what this is about. I have no idea what this comic's about. No one has an idea what this comic's about. We're liking it, and they think the engagement means that it's like, no, they're stopping because they think the art is good, not because they're interested in the story. So you've kind of missed the plot on this ad that's for a Kickstarter, or people putting things in their ad that's technically, you know, bending the rules. Because, for example, Kickstarter is not a it's not a Shopify store. It's not e-commerce, right? It is essentially, it's crowdfunding. So that's SEC involvement. So you are not supposed to say that you can pre-order anything because they're not an e-commerce shop. If they were, wow, that means you can do certain things as a consumer. You were seen as investors in your thing. So when you're putting in your Kickstarter ad that I got somebody from Netflix and you got the emblem of, you know, the logo of Netflix and Disney, first you can get sued and shut down for that crap because you don't got their permission. Right. That, because I can use that too, because I've consulted from them folks. So, but I don't do that because you have to have permission. That's a whole different legal thing. So they're doing that because they're trying to get social proof and credibility, right, in doing it. But if we put the person in, half the people don't even know who the hell that person is. So everyone's clicking on it based on the virtue that you have Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that. And yet, what you're doing is getting your behind in trouble one day when they start to audit that crap. And then you're hey, it's a pre-order. I said, dude, if they ever go back and if somebody wanted to be nasty, they can screenshot all your ads and then send it to Kickstarter. I was like, hey, I thought you guys were in blah, blah, blah. Or in someone, let's say they pledged and they took the money and they want the money back and they're not going to you to like refund them. They're going directly to Kickstarter and Kickstarter is going to tell them their spiel. Well, but they said this is a pre-order. Boop, 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 boop. You show them these ads, you're going to be in trouble. You don't want to get banned from a platform for something silly. So those kind of little things that people do in the effort of trying to get stuff funded is stuff that can wind up having a not great effect later on if and when they're caught.
Right. I love this stuff. This is very similar to, like, you know, I had Gamal Hennessy on and he was just rambling for an hour and a half too. It was great, like every minute of it, you know.
Oh, I love Gamal. I try to send people to Gamal. Me and Gamal in a group together. Gamal,
he is amazing.
I've been trying, like, I'm not the lawyer. I know enough about what I need to know about you. Gamal has an account. Gamal gives a free session. Go talk to Gamal before you sign that, before you do anything. Gamal gonna tell you what you need to know, and then you decide, you know, what you're gonna do. I mean, me and Gamal both know that a lot of times people gonna just do what they're gonna do. We know you're gonna do it, but at least you were told.
Yep, at least you were told.
At least you were told. So I was like, all right, you were told. So, you know, I know we're going to take that deal. I know you're going to sign it anyway, but at least you got some information. So, stuff like that. But that's what people do at Kickstarter. But like one thing I was telling another artist, I was like, listen, I think that I mentioned it might have been Ace Blade. Because Ace Blade jumps in my lives and he'll ask me a question and I'll just like say whatever the answer is. So it might have been him or somebody else because I've said this multiple times. But they were like, well, what's my budget for a month if I want to run ads? Because my perception is if this is going to be serious for you, then you should run ads all year round. You need to figure out a budget and it has to be a number that you are comfortable with spending. If it got lit on fire, you wouldn't care. And I would say, like, if it's $300 a month, keep it at $300. So that's $3,600 for the year. Because the thing you will be able to do is that you will beat everybody out there because they only run ads when it's time for their Kickstarter. They don't run ads during any of the dead space of when they're not running. But if you can just run once you figure out, because one, you're not spending enough to run 18 to 25 ads at a time, which is what it takes for most of these larger campaigns to really do stuff, right? But you can run 2 to 3 ads a day at $5 a piece. You build up your retargeting audience and then you can run 2 ads or 3 ads up top, and then you can run 1 or 2 ads on the bottom that's only $1 a day, and it's retargeting to the people you've built in those audiences on Meta. So you'll constantly say this content and constantly in front of people's face, because a lot of what you need to do is create familiarity, right? Because once we're scrolling, we're like, we have 33-second attention span, so you need to be in front of people's face. So now when it's time for your Kickstarter, you've been marketing to them for 12 months. You're only spending $300 or less a month at this point because you've been doing, like I said, like keep these 3 ads, figure out what works, take off the ones that are not working, keep the ones that build your retargeting audience. Once you have enough people to start retargeting, which for Meta Properties, IG, and Instagram, and now Threads. You need to have at least 1,000 people in an audience to have a retargeting campaign. You can launch it for $1, $2 a day, and just that's all you need. And you just keep building that retargeting audience. Like, I have retargeting audiences sometimes in, like, smaller, in some of the cities that I operate in, of, like, 88,000 people. And I just run $2 and $3, $2 ads, $1 ads, and they have ads throughout the entire year. So whenever I need to do something, it's just cheap for me.
Yeah, that you talked about that in your live the other day, and I was, like, really keen on that. I was going to talk to you about that.
Oh, okay.
I want to figure that out. I want to figure out to do a little bit of advertisement for this coming year. So, but yeah, well, we'll get into that in a minute. But thank you so much for joining. This has been awesome. We kind of just jumped right in and just started, you know, I think provided a lot of good information. Hopefully if people have questions, where can they, you know, Knights of G on Instagram or on TikTok? Are you anywhere else or?
I am Knights of G on TikTok. I am also Knights of G on Instagram. I'll be doing a lot more stuff on Instagram this coming year since everything's kind of working out on this account. So I do have an account on Instagram, so you can follow me there on Instagram as well. You can DM me on Knights of G on TikTok. I'll probably see that first before I see it on Instagram immediately. So if you have questions or you want to consult on stuff, I can paid consulting only. I got limited time, so If you want to do that, you can DM me on Knights of G on TikTok. I also got a bunch of videos on there with a lot of good information that's already there. So check that and go through those videos first. So you can form a question to ask me if I'm on a live, or if you say, hey, I noticed stuff you said, but I really need this specific thing because I'm doing a Kickstarter campaign. It's Kickstarter campaigns that I am working on or consulting with people in 2026. And beyond, and not just combo Kickstarter. There's some gaming stuff as well. So if you want to ask me a question, catch a live, follow me on TikTok at Knights of G, also on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Hey, comic creators, artists, writers, world builders, this is your call to action. Here at Talking Comics, we love diving into the stories behind the story. Whether you're just starting out or you've been in the game for years, we want to hear your journey, your creative process, and what fuels your imagination. So, ready to talk comics with us? Message us or hit the link in our bio and be a guest on Talking Comics.
Trying to start a podcast but feeling stuck? At Aquatio, we help creators make waves with everything you need to bring your voice to life. Hosting, recording, editing, and marketing. Whether you're starting from scratch or just need a little help polishing your sound, we're here to hydropower your creativity. Comment on this video or DM us today and let's dive in.